Hi, I'm Kimberly Nichols. I'm the winemaker at Markham Vineyards. Please join us and visit our website at markhamvineyards.com.
Thank you for listening to iWine Radio. I'm Lynn Crelo Chamberlain.
Welcome to Wine and Dine.
We're continuing our conversation about the public television series Vintage Napa Valley 2012. And I understand that they're actually rerunning it. So in my market, it was in early January. We'll have a link up for you to see where that status is, where you live. So joining us today on Wine and Dine is our pleasure to meet Kimberly Nichols, who's the winemaker for Markham Vineyards. And she has, in fact, been the winemaker since November 2001. So the woman knows what she's speaking about. And her aim is to make real and respectful wines. And as you will see in a little Vimeo video that I'll have a link up to also, she says it's kind of weird calling herself winemaker because it's very much a team effort. And Kimberly, I kind of understand where you're coming from.
You do or you don't?
I do. I do. It's like, were you an only child or did you have siblings?
Yeah. No, I have a younger brother.
You know, even a family is a team effort to make, you know, get dinner on the table a lot of times and all that kind of stuff. But
absolutely.
But at Markham Vineyards, you manage several people. And I understand from basically kind of a couple different families. And then when it gets close to harvest, you probably have a lot more people who join on.
Exactly.
So are you a control freak?
Well, I don't know many people that aren't control freaks. I'm going to start out right there. But yeah, I think that you have to be a control freak when, you know, you're running an organization of any size, and you need to select people. If you don't want it to drive you crazy,
yeah,
then, you know, you have to work with people that you trust and people who can help you get that job done. And so luckily I have a great team behind me that, you know, hopefully I don't have to do too much prodding and nagging on.
So when you say, I need this done, they basically take care of it.
Yeah, because I do work it more as a collaborative effort. I mean, I give, you know, I sit down with my associate winemaker and my cellar master, and we look at, you know, okay, these are the things that need to be accomplished in the next 3 to 4 weeks. So I always give them kind of a month at a glance.
Okay, wow. Oh, that's wonderful. I would be able to work well in that kind of environment. And are you, I'm just out of curiosity, are you, so you're not a micromanager then?
Yeah, that's a trick question.
Well, you know, because it's like you say, I want this done, but I mean, I would personally be, okay, I want this done in 3 to 4 weeks, but then you're really kind of watching what the heck's going on.
Right, of course. And I'm giving, that's my sort of November through August mode is to be, give them a month at a glance. I mean, I'm day to day and in it and micromanaging during harvest because,
yeah,
you know, there's no month at a glance when you're looking at things every day.
Right.
But you need to be, there are some things that you need to be aware of, you know, looking, you know, checking in with analysis and things like that as you're moving your wines along.
And speaking of analysis, you earned your biology degree from Willamette University. In the coast of Washington is where you grew up. So how did you get this job in Napa before Markham, and that's what brought you to move to Napa Valley?
You know, Willamette University is in Salem, Oregon, and I met a boy, and that's what brought me to California.
Okay. I know that story well. So is life, I would imagine you still have family up north. Is life there very different from life in Napa Valley and like the culture of life in the community?
I think that the culture in which I grew up in Washington State, I grew up, you know, sort of in similar and different in different ways. I did grow up in sort of a tourist part of the state because there's a lot of salmon fishing in the area in which I grew up.
Okay.
So I'm very familiar with that part of the industry, which is similar to Napa Valley and having people in here. However, you know, the wines that my family consumed when I was a child are much different than the wines that they're consuming nowadays.
Oh, I believe that. And did you know early on, like as a, in high school or something, that you want, that your aim was for the biology degree to work into working in a lab in a winery?
I did not. I actually wanted to go into the medical profession, which I think you'll find is a big common denominator with a lot of winemakers.
Yes.
And then I couldn't go on to school, and my husband, who is, he's now my husband, but my boyfriend at the time was like, why don't you apply to some wineries? There's plenty of wineries where I'm from. And so, you know, I did, and look at me now.
Wow. That's amazing. How one association leads to another. You were gracious enough to say that you would agree to chat with me with this kind of geeky sort of a topic, and that is, you know, you deal a lot with the chemical and biological components and analyses of the wines that you're working with. How do you think that the chemical part of winemaking affects flavor, color, and stability?
Well, I actually, my opinions on this are pretty strong. I mean, I look at it very similarly to the way I make wines, and I make wines similar to the way I cook. And, you know, so I want them to have a nice, bright acidity. Even in the red wines, I don't want them to be completely flabby because I don't think that those go with food. And I think that a red wine with, say, a high pH, it'll be lush and unctuous in your mouth, but might not necessarily have the aging potential that, you know, a wine that was just had a lower pH and a little bit brighter acidity would have for aging potential. You'll also see those high pH wines that can be very blue or purple will also not, you know, they'll age and brown.
Yes.
Much different, because that's part of that whole aging process. Wine goes from this young blue-purple tint to, you know, the burgundy-red hues, and then it goes to the red-brown hues.
Oh, so good. I loved your analogy to cooking.
Thank you.
Totally relate to that. And, you know, in cooking, you do a lot of layering.
Exactly.
And with different flavors and that sort of thing. Do you have a particular style of cooking at home? I mean, do you like certain type of cuisine more than another? Or spices more than another?
I like comfort food a great deal. And so that's kind of where I go. But I do also, here at the winery, working with two families from Zacatecas, Mexico, I have certainly developed a palate where I like spicy food as well. So, my kids also are all over the spice now, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yummy, yummy. And then, so what kind of your wines do you like to consume with that kind of spicy stuff?
Well, I have a great shrimp, spicy shrimp recipe that goes fantastically with our Sauvignon Blanc, as well as rosé when it's in season. So I just bottled our new rosé.
Yum!
And we have a new red blend called Cellar 1879 in homage for the historical stone cellar we have here at the winery. And that is kind of a blend of, you know, and it goes back to cooking again.
Yeah.
You know, the Merlot and the Syrah in the blend add the flesh and the texture that I'm looking for. And then, you know, Petite Syrah adds that juicy, jammy middle. And the Cabernet is the backbone. And then I use the floral aromatics in both Petit Verdot and Cabernet Franc, and as well as sort of the tobacco notes from Zinfandel to sort of just create this entire fabulous blend that also goes with a different set of foods than, say, our Claret-based Merlot and Cabernets would.
Do you ever find yourself thinking or dreaming of how you want to blend things when you're not even at work? And I would imagine every year is going to be different because of what the weather produces in the vineyard.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think about blending things differently. I will think about doing things differently because of the vintage and what I know will work, or maybe I've, you know, talked to a friend and they've given me a good idea and I want to try it and see if something like that has happened. For example, in really cool vintages here, I will completely switch my winemaking style around for what we're doing in the cellar versus what we would do in a normal vintage, so to speak.
And that starts all the way back with the way you even manage the vines in the vineyard?
Absolutely.
Yeah, with pruning?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm. And you've been suffering so much with drought the last couple of years. How are the vines right now with water, a little bit of water that's come?
Yeah, we're happy to have the water that we have, and the vines have, you know, the wells and the reservoirs look great right now, so I'm happy to see that. Obviously, you know, I would like to see a little bit more water, but, you know, I think we're going to be okay. We're going to make some great wine.
Oh, Kimberly Nichols, winemaker from Markham Vineyards. This has been such a pleasure meeting you. We thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Lynn.
We will have links up for you to learn more, and you can find out about the broadcast dates from VintageTVSeries.com. You're listening to Wine and Dine.
You're listening to iWine Radio.